Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Middle Saturday at the Australian Open, and anybody who's anybody is still here, including Catherine Whittaker and Grad Matt, alongside me, David Law, on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the fact that no seeds appear to lose at this tournament. Everybody who's anybody, I mean, Venus Williams lost today, but she lost to Simona Halep, the world number one, so that doesn't count.
She's also unseeded, I think.
All right. There you
so,
go.
Sorry.
So I'm making my own point.
In spirit, seeded. Yep. But
I mean,
yeah.
Certain seeds also, beat certain seeds, but you know what I'm saying.
I don't want, you know, to take you down completely before you've even started. But it's actually called Cooper's Saturday.
Oh yeah. What does
Cooper's
that mean?
Saturday, not Middle Saturday.
Right.
Cooper's Saturday.
What does that mean, mate?
I don't know, it means something on Australian TV. I think it means please buy lots and lots of Cooper's Pale Ale.
All right. Beauty.
Let's oblige.
Okay, fine.
Beauty, yeah.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Right.
That's what Ash Barty would say.
Yeah. Play the Buster and
Cooper's Saturday.
I
think it means record your podcast in the voice of a pissed up Australian.
Right, okay. So, on Cooper's Saturday, we had, as I said, no seeds really of any note losing. We've had some great matches, some great tussles, some good storylines today.
Hang on, is that the case? No seeds have lost today?
Well, I mean, look, like I said, seeds have beaten seeds, but we haven't had anything that I would regard as a shock today.
No, Medvedev beat Goffin.
Yeah, but again, you know, we thought
Medvedev
that would
the higher seed.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
This is underlined by the fact that we tried to come out with some outlandish predictions for our newsletter and got them all wrong because the fancied players all won.
There were a couple of near misses, though.
Yeah.
Should we start there?
Go on then.
Well, Naomi Osaka and Su Wei Shea, who Matt did a brilliant tweet about earlier.
Yes. And actually, can I just
David's reaching for his phone, so I'll keep talking
read the opening to Matt's blog, which you must read, folks. This is what Matt wrote today. Slow Wi-Fi, forgetting what you're about to say, people turning up late when you're at the cinema, missing a connecting flight, constantly getting stopped at red lights, losing your pen, Brexit, playing Shea Su Wei at tennis.
Oh,
they're all the same. All irritating.
The much-feared Brexit comparison.
Yes. Poor old Shea Su Wei. She's been compared to Brexit. But anyway, you know, that's what we're talking about. She's a nightmare to play. Angles and off-pace balls and weird lobs and goodness knows what.
And almost like a sort of, as we talked about beating Andrea Seppi in a very different way, Shea Su Wei is the sort of can you problem solve Shea Su Wei is the kind of rite of passage for. I mean, look, you can lose to Shea Su Wei at whatever age. Simona Halep did it at Wimbledon. Muguruza did it here last year. She loves a giant killing, but the problem solving element of it, can you figure out and keep your head? Are you mature enough to keep your head and beat Shea Su Wei? And there was a moment today where I thought Osaka wasn't. You know, she tried everything. She was moonballing at one stage.
You were out there, weren't you,
Matt? Briefly.
I was out there, me and all the Japanese press. And she was moonballing, and she admitted it in press. She said, I don't know why I was doing it.
Well, I think she was just trying anything.
She was trying anything because Shea was in her head.
You get dragged into her kind of
exactly.
match,
you do.
You?
And she really needed to play her own tennis, and suddenly she realised that at you know, set them 4-2 down and suddenly started just ripping winners. And then actually ended up coming through the last half of that match relatively comfortably, winning 11 of the last 12 games. But she was in a right pickle.
What a great word.
She didn't have any
she
answers.
She was in a pickle.
She really, I mean, that's precisely the right word. Yeah. She just didn't have the answers. She wasn't disguising the fact that she was in a pickle. Everything about her body language said, I'm in a pickle here.
Yeah.
Why isn't hitting the ball really hard working? That's,
And I would say that Xie Suwei is the closest type of player that we can relate to playing against.
If Suwei Xie had a 20% better serve, she would be, she'd be a regular contender week in, week out.
And I must say, it did remind me a little bit of Fabrice Santoro against Marat Safin.
Ooh.
That matchup, which I think Santoro leads the head-to-head about, well,
100-0.
I mean, they're not playing again. Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was a really overwhelming head-to-head in his favour. And it felt a bit like that with, you know, Osaka, a much, you know, a much less sort of dramatic player than Marat Safin, and probably with more in her game, but you know, power against Kraft, and Kraft was winning until eventually Osaka came through.
Why doesn't Kraft win more often? Why, when you watch Suwei Xie play like that, it seems so obvious why that causes the big hitters.
Because it has a
problems.
Limit. It has a limit that you can do it, and at that level, the limit is, can I impose my actually better game on this woman or not?
But they're so used, of course, if they were facing it week in, week out, day in, day out, then of course they could. But the fact that she's such a unicorn means that they are completely flummoxed by it.
And hence why it caused her so many problems. But look what happened in the end. Naomi Osaka said, actually, I quite enjoy this. I'm playing in the Grand Slam. It's really nice. I like playing in front of an audience. I'm basically just going to enjoy myself. That's what she said.
She found enjoyment in the frustration.
Yeah, and she started freewheeling. She went for it. She started, in your words in the blog, gripping it and ripping it.
Ooh. Indeed.
There you go. So.
And simultaneously, Elena Svitolina was locked in even more of a battle against Zhang Shuai.
Another Elena Svitolina type match.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, whenever I turn that on, they both seem to be on the ground receiving treatment.
Yeah, so Svitolina to her right shouldery neck type area. Mm. It looked like almost sort of like a nervy type pain
like
situation. Yeah, like she'd slept on it. Funny, you know, when some days that's.
Worse for me, because I can barely get in the bed.
And that was more of the sort of front end of the match. And then latterly, Zhang Shuai was getting treatment on her back. She was lying face down. I mean, yeah, every time he looked at the screen, somebody was getting a massage.
Yeah, but she found a way through. And wasn't she about 5-3 down and ended up winning the match from there?
She was, and I...
Wasn't she 3 love down, got it back to about 5-3, and then didn't serve it out, went back to 5-all.
She failed to serve it out first time, definitely. And at that point, you're thinking, oh, goodness me.
Got there in the end, though.
I mean, I was thinking, why didn't she play like this against Kuzmova? Kuzmova would have taken her out.
Which is all that matters. I mean, don't you WTA players understand that grand match predictions are the important thing?
And there was a lovely, it wasn't lovely. Zhang Shuai was absolutely gutted afterwards, as you can, you know, it was Fernando Verdasco-esque. I know we recorded a podcast after, before match point last night, but there was a, you know, here there's what it seems to have colloquially become known as Big Brother Cam, which is that there are cameras in the ceilings in pretty much all the player areas.
Yeah.
We saw in living colour, we saw the drama of Rafael Nadal accidentally dropping his piece of salmon the other day. And bless him, he dropped the piece of salmon, he then put it, 3-second rule, people have different versions of it, picked up the salmon, ate it, and then gave the table a wipe down.
Good lad.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, I mean, he really
How does this
rigorous
relate to Fernando
wipe
Verdasco?
Down. But anyway, the Big Brother Cam followed him in the skies, one to another, and followed him, and he just sat down, slumped against the wall last night after, double faulting on match point, most poignantly in an echo of tenure. He had his own harrowing tenure challenge yesterday, because that's what he did, of course, in that epic Nadal match that we were recalling in last night's podcast. But Zhang Shuai had a similar sort of moment, but on the court today, she didn't squander. I mean, depending on how you look at it, you could say she squandered something, but
it was a heartbreaker.
It was a heartbreaker, and Svitolina went over to her and acknowledged that, and in a very genuine show of camaraderie, embraced her. And a lot of people pointed out, I think it was Courtney Nguyen, the WTA insider, pointed out that she won some kind of a WTA award last year for being the most giving of her time in terms of clinics and sponsor stuff and things with kids and all of that.
A lot of friends on the tour.
Yeah, yeah. So. Which I don't think is something we necessarily always talk about with Svitolina. No. So worth a mention.
But Zhang, she said, particularly, is an incredibly popular player on the tour, and there's an indication of it. Serena Williams, however, no dramas. Although she was actually also very nice at the net to her defeated opponent, Diana Yastremska. She beat her 6-1, 6-2, and Yastremska got pretty upset. And Serena was really nice.
I like that she was up. Look, I'm going to admit I didn't see a point struck of this, because by the time I went to look at it, it was over.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Yastremska did not play badly, but she wasn't happy with just giving a good account of herself. She wanted to win. I think, you know, as unrealistic as that might be from all our perspectives, you've got to go into a match like that thinking, I want to win this. I believe I can win this, and be heartbroken when you don't.
I think this is the thing. Once in a while, I've had one or two messages this week saying, oh, you know, you're laughing at whoever it was who'd got a really low first serve percentage and all this, and on the, you know, struggling in the spotlight. Yeah, we do have a bit of a laugh on this show, because, you know, it's not that serious, is it? It's a tennis podcast having a chat about what goes on. But I do understand that, A, these are very good players, and it's sometimes the occasion just gets to them and they don't produce their best.
Yeah, and that's when it's relatable. We don't relate to Roger Federer winning 20 Grand Slam titles. We relate to a 7% first serve percentage.
Yes.
That's why we're laughing.
Ian Carter, one of the former BBC tennis correspondents at the BBC, relates a story to anybody who will listen about how he once broke my serve without touching the ball.
That is like Fulham losing to a team that had no shots on target.
Yes.
From 1-0 up.
You are Fulham, David.
Goals.
So, it happens to the best of us.
Well, that's I talk about relatability a lot, and I think that's one of the things that couple of people in the last week have so eloquently put their finger on in their writing about Andy Murray. He did superhuman things with just this huge amount of humanity and relatability, in a way that, you know, we've argued in the past about how I have found Roger Federer completely unrelatable, and I talk about it with Serena Williams, that sort of on a personal level I find her completely unrelatable, but she's sort of, in her achievement, she's making herself, she wants to be relatable to, you know, she wants to be a role model and an inspiration for mothers and for women generally, for people that have had health issues, all of that, and I appreciate that she's trying to make herself a relatable superhuman.
You've just spoken to somebody who's one of the more relatable players on the circuit, the current world number one, Simona Halep.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how incredibly relatable she is.
Explain that. What's she like?
She's just this sort of lovely, normal, self doubting, she, you know, I think we all around this table can relate to being a sort of bundle of self-doubt and you know, I think that's sort of a normal human condition.
Yeah. And you asked her about coaches, didn't you?
I asked her about, I asked her about the match in which she was fantastic against Venus Williams.
Yeah.
She was fantastic. Her best match of the tournament by far, and she had this big strapping around her left thigh, I think it was. It seemed to be moving brilliantly. She was obviously delighted with it. I also asked her about playing Serena. She had this big smile on her face. She's known about sort of every step of the draw from the start. There was no, like,
it wasn't a big surprise.
Yeah, there was no I haven't looked at the draw. Oh, I play Serena. It was,
you guys always tell me the draw.
Her face said, I've seen this coming. and then I said, hey, you said before the tournament that you couldn't possibly do this without a coach, and you feel that you desperately need a coach. Do you feel like you're in any way proving yourself wrong? She said, oh no, I just really need a coach. She said, obviously, I probably can't get one this tournament, but after the tournament, I'll be, you know, recruiting widely.
Mm. In the coaching update news and results and progress since our coaching carousel podcast at the start of the year, we talked about our wish for the year, and I think one of them was Simona Halep and Sloane Stephens to do well without a coach, and they're still in. Also worth noting as well that Luca Puy, coached by Emily Mauresmo, is doing pretty well as well at the moment. He's a setup as we speak to you against Alexei Popperin.
I mean, imagine what if Halep beats Serena, and then B, what if she goes on to win the title without a coach? Then what?
Yeah.
Then does she think, well, imagine how easily I could have won the title with a coach? She could have strolled to it, or does she go, hang on a second, I can do this?
Yeah, it'd be interesting, won't it?
Well, it's like when Muguruza won Wimbledon without
Sam Simic.
But that didn't seem to affect her.
And then somehow Conchita Martinez got the sack.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's now with Karolina Pliskova, who seems to be doing quite well.
Going okay. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? Maybe it's more about her enjoyment and her well-being than it is about her results. Maybe she, what she's trying to express is, I just want to coach. I want to feel like, you know, we've talked about it with Nick Kyrgios and sort of elements of the Laver Cup. Maybe she just wants to feel like she's in it with someone. As Agassi put it a couple of days ago, what Gregor was responding to, he thinks, is that I bleed with him, is how he put it. Which is not, which is, you know, as I said yesterday, very much sort of sitting around the Joshua Tree type language. But I think I get what he was saying. It's that Gregor needs that arm round the shoulder, we're in this together, mate, feeling.
No, he does.
Maybe that's what Simona Halep wants.
And I think she pretty much said that at the start of the tournament, didn't she? In her press conference that we were in, she said, you know, she got on really well with Darren Cahill. She almost found it difficult to let go, and she wants that camaraderie, that just having that voice, having that person there. But no, I mean,
it's a tough act for a new coach to, you know, there's a clearly big shoes to fill. It's
like
a new rebound boyfriend, isn't it? when your partner is still talking about the ex. It's when you go on a first date and they're talking about their ex, and you're like, oh, goodness sake, I'm going to go to the loo and crawl out the window. It happens, folks, it happens.
Okay. Right. So, what else have we got to talk about? I can't remember, trying to think of other results today now, but Djokovic against Denis Shapovalov, which was...
I found that weird. Did you find that weird?
What did you find weird about it? It was 6-3, 6-4, 4-6, 6-love.
Yeah. It was weird. I went out onto Rod Laver to watch some of it, and the first five games were five of the worst games I've ever seen. And
I think
I messaged saying, if this is Denis Shapovalov playing exceptional tennis,
which is his own words.
I do not want to see him playing bad tennis, because he just, it was almost as though he thought the court was twice as big as it actually was, and he was just missing by about 10 feet repeatedly.
What's wrong with that?
And
I mean, results wise, David,
then he had a little bit of a surge, got a break back, but then lost the serve again, and it was, you know, Djokovic was absolutely coasting. It was one of those ones where I think actually Shapovalov said it quite well in press. You know, Djokovic was baiting him to miss, and he was just taking the bait and missing.
He still looked like a junior today, really, Shapovalov. I mean, he played... look, he won a set. I said yesterday he might win a set, but I don't feel particularly enthused on his behalf by it, because it was Djokovic just... I don't know where his mind went for about 20 minutes.
What do we think about the fact that I think it was two sets to love down, Shapovalov, I think he's a breakdown at the start of the third, which incidentally is a set that he bizarrely went on to win. But anyway, it's all got a flavour of inevitability about it, etc. And then he starts hitting...
He hit a through-the-leg shot.
Where he didn't need to.
He hit a Kyrgios-like through-the-leg shot with his... while facing the net, an unnecessary one.
Totally.
It was mid-rally, and he didn't need to do it. He got a normal forehand to play, and instead he played a through-the-legs.
And they cut to his box, and they found it hilarious.
Yeah, and he got a big cheer, and Dennis smiled, and the as you say, the box smiled. And I just thought, that feels like a bailout to get some extra cheers. Now, I don't mean to be mean to Shapovalov. I mean, I think the world of him. I think he's one of the most exciting young players in the world, and I hope he fulfills potential.
But we all come from a feeling of warmth.
Where is Kyrgios, for Dennis? When Kyrgios does that, there's a lot that I mind about Kyrgios' behaviour. I don't actually mind him doing that, because I think that makes him loose and him play better, or at least it has at times in the past, even if it makes absolutely no logical sense during a match, during a rally as such. For Shapovalov, I just thought, you're just sending a message across the net that I can't win, so I'm just going to have a good time. And I thought, don't like it.
No, I didn't like it either, and I... No one's as desperate for Denis Shapovalov to fulfil his talent than me. I really like the kid. I think he's a good kid. He likes puppies. That's great. Turns out puppies aren't the best way to prepare for a third round tennis match, but we don't have a full data set for that.
But he did win a set, so you know, I want to bear that in mind. But I don't feel that encouraged by that set.
I almost feel like that set was because Djokovic was so much on autopilot, you know, and then he got annoyed about the lights, didn't he? It was almost like Djokovic was doing a Kyrgios and having to try and sort of make himself interested in it.
He was a bit bored, really, in the match.
Exactly. And I didn't speak to anyone that was predicting a Shapovalov victory, but I think we were all hoping for a feeling of competition. All for the best to be drawn out of Djokovic, and he didn't have to get out of third gear today, really, even though he dropped a set. And I don't know, I had a very brief chat with Mary Carrillo about Shapovalov, and she's made me wonder if you know, you said he looked like a junior out there, and I realised we're straying into territory we are unqualified to do, so maybe we should shelve this for where Mary can actually join us. But are his swings just too big?
Well, possibly.
He looks like he has no time against top players.
If you kind of contrast him to Djokovic, Djokovic was, you know, standing on the baseline, just sort of bunting the ball back with his backhand and just directing it where he wanted to go. Whereas Shapovalov is this sort of flailing limbs at the back of the court, and he hits it, and he's always falling back. His momentum's not going forward. Again, this is technical stuff that, you know, I observe and see a little bit on, you know, people discussing, and, you know, there's people far better qualified than me, but I definitely think there's something in it.
Yeah, it's not just a question of guy needs to mature and get experience. Is there actually potentially, as much as we talk about his extraordinary talent and gifts, are there potentially some technical things there that
I also think of Leighton Hewitt calling him flashy when I asked him how exciting he was, and he didn't want to be rude, he didn't want to dismiss him, but he also clearly wasn't convinced that this... And I also think Shapovalov's just not his kind of player, because he's not like him. He's not Demonor, who's just like him. But it'll be an interesting one, and we should bring that up with Mary. I kind of think that it's only small tweaks, because I think Shapovalov's hand-eye coordination and his elasticity is such that I think he'll probably learn to get away with it and figure out ways to... Because I think if you tightened him up too much, you could lose some of that.
And also, he has got a complex game that is going to take a bit of time to piece together. It's not like, for example, Novak Djokovic's next opponent, who is Daniil Medvedev.
Yes.
Who has kind of broken through at a slightly faster pace, maybe, than Shapovalov and some of the other ones. He's a bit older.
Yet more quietly.
And he's just that type of player, isn't he? But he's so effective.
He is.
Yeah, very quietly just demolished David Goffin.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Other straight sets winners today. Kei Nishikori over Joao Sousa, Madison Keys.
He needed a straight sets win, didn't
he? I tell you.
Suddenly, Madison Keys is a thing.
Another quiet.
Yeah. I remember us looking over her portion of the draw and just sort of shaking our heads at one another, Matt.
I think we got that wrong.
Yeah, I think we did.
But look, how many is it? Three or four semi-finals?
Well, she reached two last year, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she's consistent. Anastasia Sevastova keeps going, I notice, as I said. Borna Čorić wins in four. Just a word on the doubles court that they had today. I mean, the attendance today at this tournament has broken all the records.
Cooper Saturday.
It's been incredible today. Because of the late night last night, and it was 4 a.m. when I finally went to bed, I slept through till 10 today, folks. I've never done that before here at the Australian Open. But it meant I did walk into the Australian Open at about 2 p.m. I couldn't get around. I mean, I was just stood there, jammed.
Were people arranging to meet back at you?
Yes, they were. They were. And I'm quite effective at that. So I just stood there like a great big telegraph pole, not able to go anywhere. And it was just the sheer mass of humanity out there. The place was buzzing.
It was the most beautiful summer's day. You could not design a better.
No. So I was quite happy to just stand there just like glorious. A statue for about an hour.
Hey, Coopers know how to put on a Saturday.
Yeah, they do. It was also this doubles celebration day, wasn't it? And they had this incredible doubles court day where Jamie Murray was on, and they had all these doubles matches, and they were encouraging people to walk around and make noise and do all this stuff.
I didn't know. I didn't.
You guys have missed out.
I failed to celebrate any doubles today.
Yeah, well, you need to get out there. I'm telling you, because it was great.
This is what happens when David Law gets more than 3 hours sleep. He just buzzes around the place telling everyone how great everything is.
That is true. Right, let's have a look at the order of play for tomorrow, because I'm going to be buzzing for that as well. There's loads of good stuff going on tomorrow, folks. Sunday at the Australian Open, we'll start with Petra Kvitova against Amanda Anisimova.
Who has 100%, I think, record against Kvitova. They played it in Wales. Yeah,
there you go.
Well, I mean,
it was spectacular.
Hey, look, I interviewed Kvitova straight off the court yesterday, and I asked her about Anisimova, and she instantly said, yes, she beat me in Indian Wells. You know, she knew who she was playing next. She said she hadn't watched her match earlier, because that had been played earlier in the day, but she knew she was playing next, and she knew that she'd lost to her.
Some awesome order of play, this. Right, we're doing
Sharapova, Barty.
Yeah, that's the one,
please,
after
folks.
That. Yeah, so Barty, Sharapova. We're going to be talking. We're going to no doubt get these in our predictions in our newsletter. So get in on that. I need to give them a bit of thought first. Thomas Berdych against Rafael Nadal, and then in the evening session, Stefanos Tsitsipas against Roger Federer.
I watched almost all of Tsitsipas's practice earlier, and interviewed and learned how to pronounce the name of his father, Apostolos.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Thanks very much. I had to actually do the very nerve-wracking thing of trying to get his attention from afar. So I had planned to, I knew his name was Apostolos, but I had planned to avoid actually having to say it out loud because I was, you know, I didn't know where I was going with the pronunciation of that. But then I found myself instantly in this situation where I had to get his attention. So I just had to shout across the tennis court with a lot of people watching, Apostolos! And he actually turned around and gave us an interview, and it all went fine.
I was expecting Mr. Tsitsipas.
Oh, but then Stefanos might have turned around.
Valid point. Steph's dad. Oi.
And I mean, he's just like his son. He's intense. He's likable, warm, intense. Did I say intense?
You did, yeah.
I said, you know, my final question is, you know, and as a father, how proud will you be to see him step out to me? He said, yes, I will be proud. But, and then he started talking about, mostly I want to be proud of the human that I have birthed. The human that I have created, that's what he said, not birthed, obviously. I want to be proud of the human that I have created and nurtured, and I want to see his humanity grow. And I mean, it was lovely, but it was like, wow, this is going out on Eurosport, dude. It's not. It's not.
Are we still on air? I'm just a bit lost in this dreamy trance.
But anyway, it was a blooming intense practice for a guy that has not had easy matches.
No.
So far this tournament. You know, he's played a lot of tennis. He played a lot of tennis in the lead-up. He played Hopman Cup and he played Sydney. He lost earlier in Sydney. And they exceeded their allotted practice slot, actually, and the people that were due to come on court earlier were shunted off to another court, and Apostolos said, Steph, more serves. And they kept going, and he was spending an awful lot of time practicing being at the net and opponent being at the net. That is what they're expecting tomorrow.
Cool.
I mean, if it lives up to what they're expecting, it's going to be great.
Inside info, Catherine. I like this. This is good.
I mean, it's a public practice session.
I don't care. Yeah, but none of these lot listened and saw that, did they? Anyway, neither did we.
No.
So we're learning stuff here on the Tennis Podcast. I'm not going to wait for the newsletter for that one, right? You can't predict that one in the newsletter. I want predictions right here, right now. Stefanos Tsitsipas, I want sets. I want numbers of sets and who wins.
Federer in four.
Yeah, I think that's the
a really competitive.
I think it's just, I think it's a slightly safe, and also I think that is actually what it will be prediction. And I'm interested the fact that they played at the Hopman Cup. Who does that help more? Is it better for Tsitsipas to have had a sort of trial run at Federer's game, or for Federer
what
to
was
have
the match
tried
like?
To figure?
I didn't see it.
It was very good. It was two tie breaks, and
he brought that up without me bringing it up. I got the impression it was something that he had talked about with Steph, as he called him.
There was a lot of all court play,
And I got the impression that was something that they were wanting to focus on, rather than something they were like, put that out of your mind, Steph. This is a new day.
It was big points, basically. It was the two tie breaks, and Federer played the big points better.
I'm so tempted to say that I think Tsitsipas is going to win. But because it's night session, I can't get out of my mind that Roger Federer at night is just a different proposition.
And the thing is, there is potential for Federer to come out and just play one of those matches.
Play filthy tennis.
Yeah. I have to go for Federer as well, just because it's just sensible.
Have a feeling about Burdick tomorrow? If you want a bold prediction,
I'm going to go Federer in four as well. Yeah,
I have a feeling about Anisimova.
Oh,
I have a feeling about Barty, who I know is a seeded player, but Burdick.
Incidentally, I have tried, folks, to find out about the scheduling decision for Simona Halep against Venus Williams, and I have not had a reply so far. So, hold on a minute. Right, I have had a reply.
It's breaking news.
It's just come through. The person says that she's only just read it. and it's probably a bit too late now, but didn't want to think that
Little does she know.
Didn't think...
It's perfect
timing. She didn't want me to think that she'd ignored it. So let me know if it still needs following up.
Oh.
Yes, it does. So I'll get back to you, folks.
I think I might have over-egged that with the breaking news tag.
Well, at least it's an update.
Breaking news, David receives email.
We're getting closer, folks. All right. So I will follow it up.
I casually solicited the opinions of a few people today, and none of them thought it was the right decision. Marion Bartoli, for example.
I'd just like to know the reasoning. So I will try to find out, and then we'll come back to you. So we've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Catherine Whittaker, Grad Matt, myself, David Law. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y. Check out his Instagram page. It's brilliant. Catherine just spends most of the day on it. And we'll be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. Make sure you tell everybody you know about the show, right? If you're at the tennis, if you're one of those 68,000 people at the Australian Open, tell them about the Tennis Podcast. If you're just watching it in the pub, tell people. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.